Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
Welcome, everybody. It is March 22nd, 2021, and this is episode 217 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. We are coming to you live on Facebook like we've been doing for the last 3 weeks, and I think it's something that we're going to continue for the foreseeable future. It's nice to keep Eric and I honest on schedule, and I think it's good if we start this regular schedule to get people who want to view it live, listen live. They can do so every Monday afternoon around 12:15 Pacific time. Of course, you can catch our audio podcast at any time on your favorite podcast feed or torchcast.com. And of course, you can view this video anytime you want at 3 in the morning if you're bored, I guess. But joining me today, of course, as always, wearing his Vegas Golden Knights shirt
today. Golden Knights.
It's Eric Nathanson. What's up, man? It looks like Las Vegas sports are starting to permeate your wardrobe. What's going on?
Hey, Chad, I'll wear anything that the casino gives away for free. They get enough of my money. So when that happens and they're giving away things like Golden Knights gear, I'm totally going to jump on it. That is more what really happens. I didn't watch any of the Knights. I don't ever watch any of the Knights games. I'll root them on in the playoffs, but forget about it. Hockey's not my thing. I'm just happy spring is here. Spring, it's like we're right around the corner. Next week. Can you believe it? Next week, we have real baseball to talk about.
But yeah, we're here 10 days until opening day, man. It's going to be April 1st. And this will be our last kind of spring training podcast. I know that next week we'll be doing our season preview, which we typically do. We throw out our predictions for the year, have fun with all that stuff. But right now, the Giants are sitting at 8-9 with a handful of ties this spring. Things are looking okay. I mean, there's nothing out there that really has too much cause for concern, except perhaps, some pitching injuries, a couple things with Belt, what have you. But before we get into the meat of this, I mean, what do you feel? How do you feel about the team so far? I mean, you feel generally positive, kind of what you expected? Any major concerns?
I'm way more optimistic than I anticipated. I really am. I started this spring training, saying, okay, there's a definitive Dodgers, Padres, and then the Giants are like, they're third, but there's a big drop. And now, after looking at what's going on this spring, I think the Giants are closer to the Padres than I thought. Depth, which is what we've been harping on for weeks now, is the key. And I think the fact that the Giants are so deep in pretty much, I mean, every position, they're fighting for roster spots in certain places, but there's depth in the minors no matter what happens with the roster cuts. I mean, Farhan's got 80 million guys on this roster now. And the talent of just the guys, you know, we saw yesterday, I don't know if you watched the game yesterday against the Dodgers. It was just one of those, after two televised games that the Giants just got absolutely beat the crap out of. It was nice to watch them do things and to see Yastrzemski come through with a two-out, two-run homer, to see Solano come through with a two-out knock, to see Trump hit a grand slam on his birthday. But just the regulars, you know, to see Yaz and those guys get into it, it made it feel even better because it's not just the guys that are sort of in camp that are hot. It's everybody. They score runs. And I've never been this excited for a Giants offense. I think that that's really where the optimism comes from. I think the pitching staff is kind of, all right, that'll be figured out at some point. So I'm cautiously optimistic, I guess, is the best term for entering 2021. I mean, do you see any glaring holes that are going to make us see not, you know, where we get blindsided here? Or are you, exactly, options is a good problem.
Yeah. You know, there's a comment there from Sergio saying that options is a good problem to have as manager. I think that hits the nail on the head. I think, having this many options is a good thing. It's not going to hurt. But I will say this, there's so many people on the roster, so many guys on the roster, or at least potentially on the roster, certainly on the spring training roster. Are they all forever Giant?
Yeah, right? Well, they feel that way this spring. I don't know, like more so than other springs. I feel like I know who these guys are. There's years yeah. where we don't know the Jason Krizans and, you know, who else would it be? Jason Vosslers of the world, but we do this year.
All right, so the Giants did, speaking of all these people they've had in camp, they did do another trim last week. They narrowed it down to 42 players, of course, by opening day. In the next 10 days, they got to get it down to 26, so another, 16 need to be trimmed off the roster. But most recently, we had Elio Ramos, of course, even though they're still eligible to play in these spring training games. They've been assigned to minor league camp, but theoretically that camp doesn't start until April 1st anyway. So he was sent down, obviously, Duggar, Sam Long, Jason Krizan, and Anthony Banda. So, I don't know, these are kind of expected. I mean, I know Duggar is one of those guys who's been up and down for years now, and he just can't seem, I mean, it's been a combination of injuries and inconsistencies as well, but he's just one of those guys. It's not quite the same situation as Brandon Belt, but kind of like a mini Brandon Belt. You keep expecting him to break through, and it's just, he just can never do it for some reason.
I mean, the fact that he's been reassigned already, I mean, we were talking last week, banding about, I mean, is he the fifth outfielder? But that question's been answered. He's definitely not the fifth outfielder anymore. But, yeah. I mean, that doesn't mean we won't see Duggar at the major league level. You know, like I was just saying, depth. And people are going to get hurt. There's going to be injuries at times. And so they're going to need to fill a role. Ramos, we knew. The Sam Long one is the one that interests me the most. I think that he'll be back at the big club. Like I said, they've talked about stretching him out to be a starter. So who knows how they're going to treat that. And poor Jason Krizan, though, I read today, he's like 31 years old. He's been in the minors. He's had like 1,000 at-bats in the minors.
Yeah.
Poor guy may never make it, you know, and you feel for guys like that. But that's what happens when you have, you know, 80 million guys right now. And they're paring it down. There's I'm guessing the next time we see roster moves is just kind of when they do the final roster after the A series. When we're doing this time next week, I wonder if we'll know, or if it'll be a day or two afterwards for us to find out the final 26. But I think that's the next time they'll make cuts, probably. And like you said, none of these are unexpected. You know, the Duggar one just closes the door on him making the opening day roster. Other than that, nothing really affects anything in the whole general long-term plan.
He put in the comment section, will we see Luciano this year, and is he the future after Crawford? No, I don't think we're going to see him this year. I think he's just a little too young for the Giants are right now. They certainly have very high hopes for him, and he's definitely impressed for some of this spring. But, you know, he's young, and he's got a lot of holes in his swing at this point. So it's one of those things you don't want to bring up guys too early. It's extremely doubtful to me that that's going to happen. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, with service time, too, they can manipulate it as much as they want to. I think at the earliest we see him is like end of April 2023. I really do. He's still a kid, and as much talent as he hasn't played a full season even, I believe it is, in, you know, a minor league. He's only played low A. So he's got to get some reps in before the Giants can even consider it. That losing that minor league season last year was a killer. It really was. Yeah. And guys like Luciano are probably the ones that are going to get hurt the most. But that's what's going to screw up the service time thing, because teams are going to be forced to try to play with that number at the same time that a guy may be a year behind the development that they wanted. And so, you know, do you rush him up and force him to the big leagues if you don't think he's ready? And I don't think that's the answer. So I think probably April 2023, if not September 2022, will be the earliest we see Luciano. I think Crawford is the type of guy that could re-sign with the Giants for 1 year, depending on which direction they're going after this season. So, you know, I think that Crawford, Posey, Belt, and who's the other? Cueto. I think they're all candidates to re-sign at the end of the year. So
yeah, no, I agree.
Depending on which direction the Giants go. So I don't think that they're ready to pull up the young guns in that respect.
Got it. All right, so let's check in on some of these guys that we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks. And man, Evan Longoria, Longo has been crushing the ball as of late for the spring. 8 for 19, that's a .474 clip, 4 bombs and 10 RBI. He's got a little bit of a foot issue, but like Gabe Kapler said, I listened to this morning's Murph and Mac, and I'll play a little audio of that later as he reviews the starters. But he said, yeah, he should be fine. He's letting him hit. He's a veteran. He knows how to play third base. He doesn't need his reps there if his foot's hurting. So that's okay. It also gives some of the younger guys a chance. Elio Ramos, of course, we talked about hitting with 3 home runs, 6 RBIs this spring. Yaz hit one yesterday. He's got 2 home runs for the spring. He's only got 8 at-bats so far in the spring, so nothing to shake a stick at. Austin Slater hitting .375 with a bomb and 4 ribbies. Jake McGee's looked very impressive, missing a lot of bats, 7 Ks over 5 innings of scoreless pitching. And then Logan Webb working on his new changeup that the Giants really want him to work on. 6 innings pitched, only 2 hits and no runs. So again, spring training, they're playing against a lot of AA and AAA guys, but hey, doing better is better than doing worse.
Yeah, and not as much anymore though now. Guys are playing deeper in games, they're getting 2-3 at-bats, they're facing starters a second time. You know, we're seeing starters go deeper into games right now. And it's good to see. Like, yesterday was just really good to see. Against the Dodgers, Gonsolin was pitching really, really well. And the fact that Longo was able to get to him, and then as soon as he exited the game, the Giants jumped all over the bullpen. And it was the kind of thing that gives me optimism about this season is, you know, they'll wait out the good pitcher and then jump all over somebody's bullpen. They kind of did that a lot last year, too. And it was good to see Yaz get his bat swinging well, too, because he seemed to be the one guy. LaStella, too. I think LaStella got maybe 1 or 2 knocks yesterday. And he's somebody that it seemed like he's only had a couple of hits in spring training, but. You know, Longo, what else can you say? But the guy's locked in. He wants the season to start yesterday.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's talk about some injuries. Besides Longo's foot, which, again, he's still hitting, so he's just not playing the field. Buster Posey returned to the lineup on Sunday yesterday against the Dodgers for his first time since March 13th after missing several games with right hip tightness. Yeah, so, I mean, it's kind of flaring up on him. He was 0 for 2, and he caught 3 innings. He said it felt good today. He's quoted as saying after the victory yesterday. Yeah, I mean, he's had a whole year off of baseball, and we all know about his hip surgery. So, you know, hopefully it's just like old man arthritis, you know, it's flaring up or something like that. But at the same time, it's a concern, Eric. I mean, he hasn't. You know, it's not like he's been beat up or he's out there 9 innings a day like he will be in parts of the regular season, and his hip's already acting up. So I'm a little worried about it, but we'll have to, you know, see what happens. I mean, maybe it's just a flare up and he knows how to take care of it and it's not going to be a problem.
The Giants claim that they were just being overly cautious and Buster's not really worried about it and they're not really worried about it. And honestly, I don't believe them. But to be fair, I didn't expect to actually see Buster I didn't expect to see him in the lineup yesterday. So the fact that he did get back out there right away, you know, but now he's got to get the bat going. He really hasn't done much this spring. So if his hip is feeling okay, I'd like to see him get at bats this last week of spring training, and we can really see if his hip is decent or not.
Yeah. Brandon Belt, the ever-broken Brandon Belt, is day-to-day with his heel, and he might see some game action later this week. Like we said, Longo's foot, he's been hitting, just not in the field. Alex Wooden had an ablation procedure on his back and may be back in game action soon, according to Gabe Kapler this morning, and I'll play some audio of that in just a few minutes. Nunez, yeah, it was determined he needed Tommy John surgery, so he's obviously going to be out for the entire duration of the 2021 season.
So yeah, that's kind of a bummer. Yeah, he's a Rule 5 pick that they got from the Mets, I believe. And this, it's funny because this way he actually gets stashed on their disabled list.
True.
And he doesn't take up a roster spot because as a Rule 5 pick, he needed to be on the active roster, but that's not going to happen when he's injured. This happened with somebody else a couple years ago, I remember. And I think they ended up sending him back after he pitched for a little bit for the Giants, but all of Nunez's rehab work will be done with the Giants. And it is a bummer for him because he was pitching well. The Alex Wood ablation procedure thing, I mean, that's going to force the rotation to juggle a little bit just right out of the gate.
Sorry if you heard a little echo there. Yeah, apologize for that.
That's why I paused. There's still an echo.
Yeah, echo. All right, it's I will make echo, sure that that's going to be gone in a second.
All right, I'm going to keep talking for those of you that can see us live. Alex Wood, is there an echo? No, not this time. Alex Wood being out then, you know, brings to mind, luckily they have an off day. They don't need a fifth starter, you know, for like 11, 12 games into the season. So they won't have to bring out whether or not it's going to be Aaron Sanchez or the heck's the guy's name who pitched yesterday, Casimir. I think it's going to be Sanchez. Sanchez seems excited after his first spring start. He just wanted to get out there, and you know, he got hit around a little bit, and he kind of sounded like the NFL player who says, I didn't really feel like I was in the game until I got smacked in the face, because he got smacked in the face a little bit by leaving some breaking pitches up in the zone. And Sanchez, though, you know, I expect if there's some improvement over the next couple starts, he'll be the guy they tab when it comes down to it. Wood, who knows, though? He could be back by then. I read about the ablation procedure, and it takes a couple weeks, and stiffness, I believe, is his biggest side effect he's got to deal with at this time. So other than that, I mean, Longo, I agree with Kapler. You have the quote here. He says he's a veteran and he knows how to play third. Yeah, it's the truth. I mean, the guy's been around forever.
Yeah. Speaking of Gabe Kapler, I'm going to go ahead and play a minute or two of his interview this morning with Murph and Mac. I think it was kind of enlightening in terms of him being asked the question, what does the rotation look like? And he said, hey, let me just take it starter by starter or potential, starter by starter. So I'm going to go ahead and share that audio right now. Let me bring it up here and hit play.
Rest of the rotation. Questions about Alex Wood and his spine. That's not always a great topic, right? Kevin DeSclafani and his emergence. And, of course, Logan Webb. I mean, how are we looking at – I know there's off days at the first couple weeks. So are you guys at the point where you're saying, listen, we have days to work with. We don't need to have a full rotation. Or would you like to announce a rotation before opening day?
Yeah, I think it would be actually helpful for me to talk through each of the starters and where they are. So – Gausman, I feel very confident is going to be built up, to handle that 90-pitch workload. And if everything's going just right in the first week of the season in his first start, that he's going to be right where he needs to be to take down, you know, six-plus innings of work if necessary. Johnny Cueto, I feel, you know, very similarly. Webby is making a really good push for us. His changeup has been devastating this spring, and it's a pitch that we asked him to work on. So very specific focus on throwing that changeup, throwing it for strikes, knowing when to drop it out of the zone, below the zone for swings and misses. He's done a really good job of meeting that bar. He's got a long way to go, and we ask him to do that each time he goes out to pitch, and that's a tall order. We think he's capable of handling that, but we'll see where we are. He's competing really hard, and we love that. DeSclafani is using his changeup more and using it effectively. He's using his slider. That's always been a great secondary weapon for him. And we're focused on the right pitches and the right counts with him. No concerns about his buildup. Sanchez is just a little bit behind, and that's because he's been off the field for a really, really long time. But in his last outing, as you guys know, went three innings for us and had a successful strike throwing outing, which is number one. We want to see guys come in, pound the strike, so be efficient. We want them to know their plan. We want them to push the pace, and we want them to pound the zone. And Sanchez was able to do that his last time out. Woody is a little trickier because, as you know, a few days ago he had this ablation procedure. But that ablation procedure allows him to work to his confidence level and his pain threshold, which has been really, really good the last couple of days. We're confident he's going to be back on the mound soon. So with Wood, it's a matter of how quickly we can build him up and get him ready to make an impact. That might not be on opening day. But we've also not ruled that out, that he's going to be a member of our opening day roster. So all of this is to say we have a pretty good feel where most pitchers are, but there's a little bit of wait and see left at this point.
Okay, there you go. One by one, Gabe Kapler taking us through the rotation as we
So what'd you think?
I mean, that sounds like about what we've been talking about, too. It really does. I think he's leaning towards Gausman as the opening day starter, the way he's talking, too. I think that's kind of a discussion. Does Cueto get it because he's the veteran, or does Gausman get it because he's the best? But that's positive to hear what he said about Sanchez. And at the back end with Wood, knowing that we don't need him, that's what I was just starting to say. That's so funny. That is literally what I was just starting to say. So it's good to see that he's in sync with, you know, what we're thinking over here in Henderson, Nevada.
Oh, man. If we could manage remotely. We're doing so many other things remotely.
Yeah, right.
Funny if that ever becomes a thing, you know, with technology. Well, Gabe Kapler's out with COVID. He's going to manage from his house. That'd be pretty sweet.
I mean, think about the fact that, like, Kruk and Kipe still haven't even seen Kapler face-to-face. Because they did last year, I'm sure, but did they? I mean, I know they broadcast games from the stadium.
I don't think they did last year at all, because they didn't even start the season until June or July or whatever it was. And, yeah, everyone was prohibited. I mean, okay, maybe they saw him in spring training, because remember there was like a normal beginning of spring training last year. But once everything got shut down, I mean, there was all these protocols. So like when I get my media pass last year, I went to like 5 games. You're in different tiers. They have, I don't know, 3 or 4 different tiers. I can't remember. And certain members of the ball club can interact with the players. Of course, that's going to be trainers and specific staff and on the coaching side of things. But even when you get to like their PR people, you know, people who would like grab him by the arm and say, oh, you got an interview over here. You got like a Matt Chisholm or something like that. Even they weren't interacting with the players. They were like one level removed. And then media were like 2 or 3 levels removed. And so that's why we couldn't, you know, even go on the field to watch batting practice. I mean, we had to stay, you know, in the press box or approved corridors and hallways. And obviously all interviews are done via Zoom and what have you. And what I've heard is it's exactly what's going to happen this year. My question is, I think a lot, it's going to be funny because a lot of the media is going to be vaccinated here in the next month or two, because some of the media is older or has, you know, certain health conditions that qualify them. But even that said, even the baseball players at this point, if supplies are forecast to still be, you know, be good enough by the end of May, beginning of June, I would presume that even most teams are going to have their players vaccinated in the middle of the summer. And so that begs the question, if everybody's vaccinated, are they going to allow media to interact again with the players? Or are they just going to say, no, 2021 is just going to be another, you know, remote year, I'd say, for everyone. So it'll be interesting to see, because I plan on obviously covering a few games this year. And now, you know, fans can obviously attend at Oracle. At least it looks like it's going to happen to a certain extent.
Well, the thing about it is ball clubs like how they are controlling the information right now. And ball clubs also know that sometimes media members can become a mouthpiece for players. And right now they don't have that mouthpiece. But we also don't find the hidden gem stories. And that's the thing, is there's no reporter for a guy to sound off to now. But I think it's still happening. I mean, Russell Wilson's a great example of that. It's still happening. So I don't think that changes, but I wonder, I think they're going to keep protocols in place for the whole year and wait until 2022. That's just my shot in the dark guess, because I think MLB and the Giants and everybody, every other team in baseball likes the fact that they are semi in control right now of the situation, that you can only talk to the players for a certain amount of time on this one Zoom thing. And
yeah,
it makes it easier for them, and I don't think the players are complaining as much either. I mean, the media is not always the player's friend as much as I just mentioned instances where it is.
I was gonna say, I'd say, you know, if you're a player, like, this is fine. I don't have to like go face to face with these guys ever again. I just have to sit down in front of a camera and answer a few questions. I think that's all right. All right, so we're going to get into something that Eric proposed, obviously, a few weeks ago. We've been covering our top five of X once a week here in spring training. Last week, we did our top five infielders for the San Francisco Giants kind of during our lifetime. And these are our personal favorites. It doesn't mean that they're the top five infielders statistically of all time, or the top five at Oracle, or the top five in the last 30 years. It's the top five that we designate. Eric's list, my list, and it could be for whatever reason that we deem righteous. This week, it's going to be our top five outfielders of our lifetime. So again, this is not going to include, certain players like a Melott or something like that. We weren't around for that. Or, even though, I know Willie Mays is, Eric's favorite player of all time, he didn't see him play live, yep. Right? So, that's not on his list. It's not on my list either. Even though I'm old as sin, I wasn't that old. So so we're going to go ahead and hit it off here and do our top five from five to number one. And I'll go ahead and let Eric lead off. Ironically. I just saw your list and I was like, hey, lead off. There you go.
And this man does lead off. And it's funny because Angel Pagan is my fifth favorite Giants outfielder. And I'm going to warn y'all right now, my list skews towards the more present day. And that is because I didn't have MLB TV until, the last 10 years or so. I didn't have access to watching these guys on a daily basis. I wanted to throw certain guys that are on Chad's list on my list, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it because I didn't really watch them play. And It wasn't like Robbie Thompson from last week, who was just the guy I fell in love with. There was no outfielder that I fell in love with back in the day. So I couldn't do that. So I skew newer, which is why Angel Pagan is my leadoff guy. Angel was with the Giants from 2012 to 2016. He originally came over in a trade for Ramon Ramirez and Andres Torres. And Andres eventually came back to the Giants. So that worked out twofold for them. My biggest reasons for loving Angel Pagan is, number one, he didn't care. He didn't care at all about anything. He also cared about himself a little too much. And I'm always reminded of your story when you were covering them one time and he kind of sidled up to you in the outfield. And I'll let you tell that when I get to the end of Angel. He had so many memorable, he had the inside the park home run, he tackled the fan, he was the leadoff guy on the 2012 World Series team, 2014, he was injured, but he was just one of those guys that had exciting plays during the past few years, and you just kind of, you fall in love with those guys. And even though Angel was a me-first guy, he totally was, 100% a me-first guy, fit in that clubhouse. And it fit in that clubhouse in a way that it might not have fit in other winning clubhouses. So if, Angel Pagan had been on, say, the Astros when they were crappy, he might have been run right out of town. But when the Giants were good, and even though Angel was a bit of a me-first kind of guy, he still totally fit in with them. And that's why Angel's number five on my list. I loved Angel. I would get such a kick hanging out with Angel sometime. I think it would be hilarious. Because he seems like the kind of guy that would never want the good time to end. So as long as it's, you keep making the night about him, and I hate to go back to the selfishness, but you keep making the night about him, I'm sure he'd keep going.
No doubt about that. Yeah, Angel was an interesting fellow. He actually was close to my list. He's definitely an honorable mention. And I know he wasn't with the Giants for a terribly long time, but I think we remember a lot of these outfielders and infielders particularly. Not to mention pitchers, the whole team, because of their championship years. I mean, it's just one of those things where I know I have a couple guys on my list that never won championships, of course, and may have only been with the team for 4 or 5 years, but made impacts when I was a kid or a teenager. And so they're very memorable and favorites of mine growing up. But Angel Pagan was always fun. He'd always walk by and throw a joke at you or just come up to you and start chatting just randomly. About life. He just was a real talkative chatterbox. And I could imagine, he got on probably some players' nerves at times and other times didn't. But that's what I liked about him. He kind of was just real. You know what I mean? He didn't, there was no pretense to his personality or his attitude or how he interacted with the media or fans or other players. He was real. He was raw. He was genuine. And so I think that translated into his play. You saw it out on the field most of the time. And so, yeah, that's a really respectful choice. He's definitely up there on my list. This is fun. We got some, you know, listeners, obviously, you know, commenting in. Chris, of course, our friend Chris, has his list here. Darren Lewis, Hunter Pence, Angel Pagan, which you just mentioned, Yaz, and then some guy named Bonds. Gee, why is he on that list?
Get off my list, Chris.
I know, right? I know, it's a spoiler. Well, I'll say a couple others later as we go through my list, or both lists. All right, so my number five is Chili Davis. Now, he wasn't with the Giants for a tremendously long amount of time, but he did play 874 games with the Giants. He ended up hitting .267 with 101 home runs and 418 RBI. So that's nothing to sneeze at. That's a big contribution to the Giants in the mid to late 80s. His on-base percentage was .340, which is, you know, it's respectable. That's not bad. And obviously, back in the day when they actually used to steal bases, he ended up stealing 95 with the Giants, which is more than most Giants will steal in their entire career. So
true story.
Definitely a different era back then. And obviously, he had time with the Angels and the Twins and the Yankees later in the 90s. But he was just one of those guys I had met at a card show when I was like 12 or something. He treated me really nice. But I just respected the way he hustled and played out in the outfield. And again, it was forming my fandom at that young age, just like, you know, my favorite player of all time, Will Clark, isn't the best player of all time for the Giants, but he was my favorite. Chili Davis is up there for my outfielders. And then I'll go ahead and continue in that same vein for number four, same era, Hackman, Jeffrey Leonard. And he was a lot of fun. Obviously, he kind of tended to piss some people off as well with his one flap down and taking a slow trot. But as I bring up my screen to share here, we can look at a couple of his highlights. This one in particular from the 1987 NLCS. Just watch him. Look at that.
Such a slow try.
He's so slow, man. He's just like, I'm going to enjoy this. But by the way, this was his fourth game in a row in which he homered. So look at that. Just walking across home plate. Here's slapping fives with Kevin Mitchell and Will Clark.
He's moving like an old man and he's not.
Yeah, he is. Of course, anyone wearing double zero or zero is already kind of look at me kind of thing. So I know that he turned off a lot of people, but he was definitely a fan favorite and a lot of fun. So the good old Hack, man.
I didn't realize he was with the Giants for so long. He came over in 81 and he was with them all the way into 88. I had no idea he was with them for so long, because I remember Jeffrey Leonard mostly for that 87 series. I don't remember Chili at all. I really don't. Like the whole Chili lost the ball in the lights thing, I only know from people talking about it.
That was Candy Maldonado.
Oh, that's right.
Who lost
right.
it in the lights.
Right.
Yeah.
Bad,
yeah. Yeah.
Bad,
No worries. Yeah. See?
Like, I know Chili from his later years, and Leonard I know from 87, but other than that, I don't really know him at all. That's why mine skewed newer.
Yeah, you're a few years behind me, so I can understand Chili was just a little ahead of your time. It was kind of like, you know, Jack Clark was right ahead of my time. Even though he's with the team when I was like 8, 9, and 10 years old, you know, that's kind of like just right when I started to really faithfully watch the Giants. So that's why, you know, Will Clark is up there.
Well, that's why I say Leonard is a respectable choice. The guy was the MVP of the 1987 NLCS and a losing cause because
And a losing cause, right? Yeah. Rare that you see that.
I honestly can't think of any other player that has won MVP in a losing cause. So it's just kind of one of those
for baseball. Yeah, that's a great question. I couldn't name one off the top of my head. There's probably one out there, two out there, something like that. I'm sure
there's gotta be.
Yeah.
I know there's one Super Bowl or something like that, but other than that, all right. So you had Jeffrey Leonard as your number four. Sergio Dubon, I'm gonna make you happy right now. Gregor Blanco is on my list as well. He's number four on my list. I love Gregor Blanco. I don't see the Giants winning two World Series without him. First, let's just start with the catch. There's no other place. That's when Gregor Blanco came into our existence. That's when we knew who he was. Yeah, he made the ball club as a minor league free agent. He made the ball club out of camp as an extra outfielder. And he just was not – he was not a starter. He was a spot starter. He was a bench guy. And he happened to be in that game, and I have no idea. I can't remember personally if he was put in that game for defensive purposes. But Jordan Schaefer took him deep to right center field, and he made that diving catch outstretched to save perfect Kane. And it endeared him to me at that moment, and just seeing what he did after that. Melky Cabrera goes down with the steroid suspension. So who becomes the everyday outfielder? Gregor Blanco. 2014, Angel Pagan, who I just mentioned. He goes down with an injury. Who becomes the starting center fielder? Gregor Blanco. I mean, when you think back, it still blows my mind to think back to 2014, and the starting outfield was, in Game 7, was Juan Perez, Gregor Blanco, and Hunter Pence. And none of those guys are in the league still. It's just weird to think the Giants won a title then. But that's what made Gregor so valuable. White Shark. I have to throw out his nickname because it was such a great nickname. It was such a great nickname. And he is Venezuelan born. And again, tip of the cap, the Giants have had a good pipeline of Venezuelan players. I mentioned one last week with Pablo Sandoval. Another one cracks my list this week with Gregor Blanco. See, he's number four on my list. Let's see. I'll shift gears then.
Okay.
You got anything on Gregor?
No, just, you know, it's, again, so fun to look at these lists because you love them all. You love all these players. And then when you're like, okay, I'm going to put my top five, it's hard around that, you know, kind of four, five, six, seven area. It's just like this gray area. So it's really hard. And obviously he's on my top five in the Oracle era, I would say. But he just misses out. Obviously, statistically, he wasn't, you know, the best up there. But again, that's not why we're choosing these guys. But he played with such passion. He was kind of like, you know, a little bit of Rudy in him, right? He was a guy that wasn't expected to make the major leagues or contribute much to the major leagues. He ended up sticking around a long time, a really long time. And it was great to see him just, he was always in the right place at the right time. Like you said, not just the Matt Cain catch, but so many other little things. Remember that bunt down the line and all the other little defensive gems he had? I mean, he just... always seemed to have that knock or that stolen base or that defensive play, which just was very crucial to a particular game or playoff series. So, yeah, he's definitely up there.
Yeah, I loved Gregor. Gregor is the kind of guy that can come back at any time. And, you know, he is a forever Giant. There you go.
For sure.
So number three on my list is a guy I just personally always loved because right when he was playing with the Giants was when I was playing. Was really coming into my own playing baseball. Darren Lewis, he was the center fielder for the Giants from 1991 to 1995. Mm-hmm. He won the Gold Glove in 1994, a year after he should have won the Gold Glove. Because Darren was most famous for his errorless streak that covered 392 games, 938 chances. Now, that streak has since been broken by Nick Markakis. But it's still mind blowing.
Who just retired, right? He just retired last week. Markakis did. Week. Yeah.
So what do we got? We got 162 times two is, you know, the 320. That's 2.5 seasons that Darren Lewis went without making an error. And that was kind of why. I was a center fielder in my early teen years, and I wanted to be as good in the outfield as Darren Lewis. And he was loved so much by Dusty Baker that Darren Baker is named for Darren Lewis.
Absolutely, yeah. D-Lew and his son is named for him. They had a really special relationship, him and Dusty. And he was a really soft-spoken guy, not very loud, but just an excellent defensive outfielder. You know, not the best stats. I think he ended up hitting like 246 or 249 as a Giant. But he was a catalyst at the top of the lineup, and obviously his defense spoke, you know, wonders. And did wonders for the Giants, especially that 93 season. Yeah, I think he should have gotten that.
Good job.
Ooh, wow, I got that one. But yeah, he should have gotten the Gold Glove in 93. I think 94, I mean, he was good in 94, don't get me wrong, but I think the writers are like, okay, he definitely deserves it now because maybe he should have had it in 93. But 392 errorless games. I mean, I was primarily an infielder, so that's a little bit different. But even the times I did play outfield, I can't imagine having 938 chances without an error. Because even if you catch all the routine stuff, which, you know, most of us catch all the routine stuff, there's still the ones that are like the half running, you don't have to dive, where you should catch it, but, you know, your vision's bouncing up and down. You know those ones, right?
Absolutely. But not where, even that.
Throwing. And then, you know, those would go off a glove once in a while. But the biggest one, like you said, yeah, is throwing, right? You get that single to left field or center field, and a guy's, you know, running first to third, and you're throwing, and you just sail it over the cutoff, man, or super wide of third or second. And, you know, they get the extra base, and then you get charge of the air. I mean, to basically not have that happen in two plus seasons is just incredible. Absolutely incredible.
I've literally airmailed an entire backstop from center field before. So, you know, it can happen. You know, sometimes your release point is all the way, where's the shot? All the way back here when you mean for it to be up here. And you just airmail it. And to think that he didn't even do that. And D. Lou was a Berkeley kid. So
and same with Dusty's son, right? So.
Yep. So yeah. there was all those connections. So Darren Lewis, definitely, he made my list as number three because I always, you know, you talk about defense, you want to be better defensively. You know, hitting we all want to be better at all the time. But, you know, you want to be good defensively, especially when you're a light-hitting hitter like I was. So Darren Lewis, I was a top-of-the-order kind of guy too, though.
Yeah.
So, you know, I really tried to, I don't want to say model my game after him at a certain point, but I wanted to be as good as him. So that's why he made my list.
All right, my number three of all time is your 1989 National League MVP. And let's go ahead and take a look at just one highlight from Kevin Mitchell's career. Here we go. This is 1989 NLCS Game 1. The theory of how to hit, as proposed by Kevin Mitchell. You go up to swing the bat, only the mailman walks.
Oh, boy. Was that an error by Salazar? What kind of an error? A three-run home run error. And it is suddenly 11-3 San Francisco. Only the mailman walks.
I know, only the mailman. I had totally forgotten that quote. When I saw this clip, I was laughing hysterically.
That's what I'm doing.
Looking out onto Waveland there.
Yep.
That was a fun game, wasn't it? Oh, my Lord.
I just watched this game in the last year.
Oh, did you? Yeah. Look at that, Clark Mitchell Thompson. I mean, just like, all these memories coming back from my high school days.
Did it get all the way out there? Yeah, it did.
Yeah, it did. Over the buses. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I love that. Oh, man. Kevin Mitchell, I don't have a bunch of stats sitting here because I think a lot of us know what he did. Definitely one of the half of the Pacific Stock Exchange with Will Clark. But he, again, wasn't with the Giants for a very, very long time. He had a lot of his career with the Padres and the Mets. But his short time with the Giants, he really, really did him wonders, especially that 1989 season, in which Will Clark may have won the MVP if it wasn't for Mitchell himself. Clark had an incredible year. I think did he finish second or third? Maybe it was third. He finished the NL MVP vote. But point being, that was obviously the dynamic duo that powered him to the World Series in 1990. He was number two. Okay. So, yeah, he would have won it without Mitchell being in front of him. But, another guy, you know, a solid power hitter, you know, okay defense, but obviously you're going to remember him for that barehanded catch down the left field line. I believe it was in St. Louis at Busch Stadium, which is still played to this day on, you know, modern highlight reels, which is just incredible. Catching a freaking major league fly ball, deep fly ball with your bare hand. And they're like, yeah, that didn't hurt. This is like, what?
Oh. I remember my dad when we saw that. I remember my dad saying out loud, he's like, yeah, Willie used to do stuff like that all the time. Like, he totally poo-pooed it like Kevin Mitchell did. Like, it was no big deal. And let's be honest here, Kevin Mitchell wasn't the best defensive outfielder. So for the fact that he was going to make a play like that was pretty cool. It surprised me. He was with the Giants for parts of five seasons, and that was more than any other team. He was only with the Mets for 2 years. He was with the Padres about a year. And apparently Kevin Mitchell was with the Reds for 3 years, and I don't remember that at all.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention that. That's true. I totally forgot about the Reds. Yeah. One of those guys. Still forever Giant, though. That's for darn sure.
Very, very much so, Kevin. You remember him with the 86 Mets because he's in those highlights from that game six. But then he really does. Everything else in his career is as a Giant. Mitchell just missed my list. He was the first slugger I fell in love with because, you know, it was the right time frame, 1989. I was 10 years old when he hit 47 home runs. So, of course, I was gaga for Kevin Mitchell at the time. So he just missed my list. He was an honorable mention for me.
So I think both of our number twos, it's the same.
Yeah.
It is the same. So I'm going to go ahead and play some highlights of the Reverend himself because he definitely made an impact on the Giants, not just in 2012, not just 2014, but also 2016 and all parts in between, even last year when he was with the Giants for kind of a final hurrah, which was unfortunately cut short due to just age and injury. It wasn't the best, departing from the Giants. But man, what an incredible career he had, not just with the Giants, but just excellent with the Astros and the Phillies as well. And I remember the day that he was traded and he came over to the Giants and just watching live, literally, him come to Oracle Park and being greeted by all those fans outside of the gate and giving his interviews and just everybody being so excited and him making an immediate impact on the team and not just in the playoffs. And he was one of the best acquisitions, certainly, of that era. And if he had not been acquired, the Giants don't win 2012 World Series, for sure, and maybe not in 2014, because he was a major contributor to that team as well. Just before I play these highlights, I mean, what are your kind of your favorite memories of Hunter Pence? I know there's a lot.
Yeah, you just called him the Reverend, and that's one of them. That's one of the notes I jotted down, was he was such a key to, I want to see what so-and-so is wearing tomorrow. I think it was Angel Gone. I want to see what Angel's going to wear to the ballpark tomorrow, or maybe it was somebody else. But, you know, his speeches, just the fact that he was the soul of the team. So, I mean, he deserves, it's, if it wasn't for Barry Bonds, he'd be, obviously he'd be number one on this. But, you know, he is the favorite outfielder, I think, of most Giant fans from this generation.
Yeah, he's definitely up there. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen now. And we're going to play some career highlights. I'm going to let this run for a couple minutes just because it's worth it.
Yeah, we'll react.
All right. Yeah, we'll react. Here we go.
Hit deep into left center field. And goodbye! A grand slam. And now the Giants have a five-run inning. With the big fly.
There's Blanco.
Yeah, right. Oh. I remember this one.
He was struggling. His first home game.
Yeah, I think he was struggling at the time or something. I don't.
Yeah, that was his first home game.
Okay.
Oh, this is the triple double, of course.
Yep. Got that on my notes here too.
Buster lumbering around the corner.
Show the replay. Oh.
This is off the bricks.
Unbelievable. A strong man.
Uh-huh. And that's the other thing. You can't forget his defense. He wasn't the best right fielder out there, but he was good.
I can't figure out who this pitcher is.
You know what? That's a great question. Oh, remember this? Oh, Timmy's no-no. Man. Yeah, that was excellent.
Gregor Blanco caught the final out of Timmy's no-no. Seriously.
I mean, he just, when he connected, he connected.
Yeah. I mean, look at our comments are popping. So look at how he connected with the fans too. That's what makes us, you know, the fan podcast by and for fans, because this is the connection. Look at that. They all score.
Oh, of course.
Against the L.
Yep.
I couldn't remember what series this was.
Yeah, the Washington series.
Yeah.
Santa Maria! It's only up at his eyes. Let me just hack that down the line. Oh, man.
I wonder if they had a solo home run in game one of the 2014 World Series. That kind of set the tone for that game.
It did. And he had an RBI in game seven as well.
Yep. I totally remember.
Look at
this
that play. Throw. Oh, yeah. That was such a throw. Trying to score on the foul pop.
That awkwardness of him. Flying.
Not a granny.
Oh, on Hunter Pence, they were giving away something of his. Pence at the fence, that was what it was. It was Pence at the fence.
Yeah, Pence at the fence. Exactly.
So funny.
I forgot about that one. He was on his back and it fell right into him. Whoop. Let me just catch this on my butt.
I mean, but who else
Boom.
Has this kind
That's
of
just
collection?
Crazy.
Nobody. I agree. In 2014, Pence had a chance to be the MVP of that World Series.
Yeah, for Jesus. Sure. Ugh. Well, we could go on forever, obviously. Oh, it's almost done. Might as well just let it play out.
Yeah, look at that.
Got a few seconds. See? It went by so fast because we enjoy these highlights. And for those of you on the audio podcast, sorry, you're just hearing these highlights, but we're having fun watching them too. So it's good to relieve these days. Little
I'm
nostalgia, of course.
They didn't cut in his five homer series in LA in 2013, which is basically what earned him that. I mean, it didn't earn him that contract, but it made that contract signed a lot quicker.
Yeah, for sure.
Me.
Yeah,
but,
for
I
sure.
Mean,
no.
Just.
So there's a lot of other highlights, I'm sure, that are out there. There's just someone's random assortment that I thought was decent. All right, and that's going to bring us to our number one outfielder of all time during our lifetime, and I don't think it's any surprise. That's going to be one Marvin Bernard. Oh, wait,
yes.
No, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, he was a love-hate relationship, man. I tell you, like, there are some days he was so good, and other days he swung at everything over his head. And you're like, what are you doing? Why are you at the top of the lineup?
This makes like, Dusty, no sense. I don't care what his initials are. Get him the hell out of there.
Yeah, no, he just loved Marvin. But anyway, no, of course, one Barry, Lamar, Bonds at the top of our list. And I think this was a no-doubter, a no-brainer. You know, obviously the accolades are too long to list, including the home run champ, seven-time MVP. It goes on and on and on. And, you know, 400 club, 500, everything. I don't know. What do you think stands out the most? Let's take the home run title off the table. Let's not get into that right now. But just overall, what was it that he brought to the table that made you tune in?
His ability to get to any pitch. I think that's really what it was. And it's really highlighted by the fact that he could get to that pitch up under his hands better than anybody else. I've never seen anybody turn on an inside fastball like Barry Bonds. And I don't care the amount of steroids you do in the world. I don't care how strong you make yourself. That is just talent. That is just God-given ability right there. And he had that ability to get his hands through the zone. And, you know, that identify that, not just identify the pitch, do something with it. You know, so many guys, that exact same pitch that comes up under their hands, they turn, they swing, and they foul it right into their leg. and he had the ability to turn on that, put it in play. And that's just one example. You know, he wasn't afraid to go to left field if the pitch was out of the plate and the swing took him that way. So I would say his just his swing ability is just what I always marveled at. You know, that and that totally, you know, coincides with his batting eye.
Yeah.
Because nobody could take a walk like Barry. And I know that they pitched around him, but nobody had a better eye for the strike zone than Barry Bonds. And I think just his ability to identify the strike zone was better than anybody's I've ever seen in my life. And that's always what stands out to me the most with him, is just how different he was in that way. You know, and you can identify that before the steroid era. You know, I don't care. He was doing the same crap in 96. He was spitting on balls and he was swinging the strikes.
Yeah.
And that's not something that you can get better at without just being talented at it from the first place.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that the steroids certainly increased his home run production and may have helped with, you know, hitting the ball a little bit further, gaining an extra, you know, a couple doubles here and there, and may have helped in recovery, you know, with injury. But it also can hurt recovery by adding more muscle mass, which you can tear muscles more easily, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of arguments about that. But aside from the power perspective, which he already had plenty of it before steroids, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, and I know that's an argument that's often used about the Hall of Fame argument, is that, well, if you look at the stats before 1996, 1997, 1998, whenever, because it really was the home run chase of 98 between McGuire and Sosa, where Bonds admitted that he was jealous. He was absolutely jealous of the national attention that both of those guys were getting, and they were juicing. So I think he just came to the logical conclusion, is like, well, they're getting away with it, I'm going to do it. And it was an unfortunate decision, because he clearly would have still been an unbelievable player if he had not taken steroids. And, you know, I still think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, but, you know, that I think may have to come through the Veterans Committee at some point, because I believe he only has 1 year left of eligibility to be voted in by the writers. And there was a couple years there where he was ticking up with, like, Roger Clemens getting higher on the list. But he kind of, you know, it's really plateaued and come down a little bit. So I just don't think it's going to happen next year. But what you were saying about the inside pitch, that is absolutely it. I mean, it wasn't a low and inside pitch where, you know, guys can golf it. And you see plenty of lefties or even righties do that these days. It would be up in his fists inside, you know, right at his belt or at his belly button. And he just opens up that body so quick. Those hips torque open so quick, where he gets the meat of the bat head right there. And then it just yanks it. And he doesn't yank it foul. Like, you know, it just the incredible physics it takes and the talent it takes to recognize that pitch. And the fact that he was pitched around so often. He obviously, you know, record number of walks, his on-base percentage, his OPS is, when you look at his, the, you know, the meat of his career, they're like video game numbers. They're like that player you create in MLB The Show, which is like 99 and everything, and yanks, you know, 60 bombs a year and OPS over 1,000. I mean, that's just who he is. That's who he was. He was must-see TV. He was, even regardless of the home run chase, be it 70, 71 in 2001, or ultimately 715 and beyond, it was the fact, in 755, it was the fact that every time he came up to the plate, you had to watch. You had to watch, because you never knew what he was going to do. And it was so entertaining. And, you know, I've already mentioned it before. I was there for, you know, 73 against Russ Springer and the Dodgers, was there for 600, for 500, and for numerous other home runs. I can't remember what numbers they were. But just that he would bring the stands to their feet. Even if the Giants were down by 8 runs, he'd come up in the plate in the seventh or eighth inning in a hopeless game, and people would still stand and cheer for him and be excited. And they'd
still be there because he had another at bat.
Yeah, yeah. That's what was so fun about him. And so I'll go ahead and play again a couple of minutes of his highlights. He has way too many to obviously share. Unfortunately, he came within, you know, with the rest of the 2002 Giants, just a few outs of winning the 2002 World Series, and we're not gonna beat that with the.
Why?
I know. It's so hard. It's so hard. But let's go ahead and share some of this greatness of Barry Bonds.
I think he spins on this one. That was that homer, first time playing, first home game.
Yep. This is his first home game. Yep. 1993.
The fact that we can see these things, we know these things right off the jump, just solidifies why he's number one. I mean, it's Barry friggin' Bonds.
His first at bat, too. Look at that. I forgot that. I knew it was his first game, but that was his first at bat. Wow.
Well, here comes the spin. Oh, I thought he spun here.
Oh, there is the one he spun. Was that like on number 400 or 500? I can't remember.
It might be. I swear it was against the Marlins. That's why. I mean, he's done it more than that. It's just on one of his milestone home runs. I remember he did do it.
Yeah.
Which was fine. There you go.
Yeah, sorry about that. I put the volume up for our audio podcast listeners. Probably didn't do that with 100 pence, but that's okay. Than it was last year.
That ball is drilled to deep right, and that could be number 400. It is. He's done it. He has become the first man in the history of the game to hit as many as 400 home runs and steal as many as 400 bases. It's a brand new category, and Barry Bonds is the only member. Take a look. He's a Hall of Famer.
Apparently not, Joe Angel.
That's fantastic.
I know. Take a look. He's a Hall of Famer. Yeah, maybe not, unfortunately.
He is to us.
Deep to right field.
Oh, Dad, I love that swing.
He hit 586 home runs while with the Giants. So he would have hit that just with the Giants.
That's just with the Giants.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Excluding his Pittsburgh days, yeah.
Right.
Brooks Bonds was good. Hmm. Yeah, he's all right.
Yeah, he's okay.
He's okay. Oh, man. All right, a couple more here. We don't need to see him hugging his dad and stuff.
I thought that was his dad at third.
Yeah. All right, there's so much we could go through there. It's just, what a career.
I mean, remember the home run you hit in the aforementioned 2002 World Series where Troy Gloss, we could see him mouth the furthest ball I've ever
seen hit. That's the furthest ball I've ever seen hit. Yeah, you could see him just mouth that. That was just crushed. So, you know, it's one of those things where when we were all watching him either live in the park or live on TV, you knew he was the greatest Giant that you'd ever seen with your own eyes. I know some of the, you know, my dad saw Willie Mays, so he would say Willie Mays, and that's understandable. But we're just, it's not going to happen, Eric. We're not going to see a better Giant. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. I mean, I think it's as firm as, you know, Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak, right? Of 56 games. I just think it's just something, it's not a record. It's just a feeling, an aura, a mantle, a title that we just have placed on Bonds. He is the greatest Giant we have ever seen in our lifetime. And, you know, hopefully, God forbid, we have another 30, 40 years left on this planet. give or take, yeah, knock on wood, right? We're not gonna see another guy like him. It's impossible. So I think we have to look at it and appreciate it for what it was, steroids or not. He was a very talented individual, and you know, he brought us a lot of great memories, but unfortunately he didn't bring us a world championship. That was you know, the core of the other guys that we've talked about over the last 3 or 4 weeks. But this has been fun. I love talking about this. It's a little bit of nostalgia, certainly when the Giants are not where we would like them to be competitively. It's fun to kind of look back on where they were and remember, like, oh, you know what? The Giants were pretty good back then.
You know, even though he didn't win a title, it's funny because you look right now, I saw an article go by my timeline today. Harper is entering his 10th year. Can he win a playoff series finally?
Yeah.
These are the questions we were getting about Bonds back in the day, because he was on that Pirates team that lost three straight NLCSs, and he didn't hit over 250 in the playoffs until that third one in 1992 before he came over to the Giants. And so, I mean, these are the things, though. The fact that I remember this off the top of my head, there's no other player with these kind of stats and reputation. You know, he played his part perfectly. He was the star for our team, and he was the villain against the other teams. And let me tell you, somebody was at Wrigley a ton watching him play. They freaking hated him. Oh, did they hate him? I literally had quarters thrown at me because I was wearing a Barry Bonds jersey and cheering Barry Bonds home run. So come on, like, they hated him, and that's just the mark of somebody who's fantastic. You don't hate the mediocre guy. You hate the superstar that kills you. And that's what he did. And that's why I agree with you. Nobody will ever be as great of a Giant in our lifetime as Barry Bonds. He's the best Giant we've ever seen, and he's the best Giant we ever will see.
Absolutely. Well said, Eric. All right, so we're going to wrap up episode 217, but I have an assignment for our listeners should they want to partake in it. It'd be fun. Maybe I'll set up a little Google spreadsheet for this as well, or just a form, I should say, so you guys can't change your answers. But I'd love, we've done this in years past. We've gotten predictions from our listeners on what you think the Giants' win total will be this year. And it looks like, hopefully, cross our fingers as we're entering the end of this long tunnel of COVID, that we should and probably will have a full 162-game season this year. So we want to hear your predictions on how the Giants are going to do, because next Monday we're going to have our annual season preview episode, and I'm trying to get a couple of guests as well, which are not confirmed yet, but we'll hopefully have them on. But regardless, we want to go ahead and share our predictions for how the Giants are going to do this year, and we'd love to hear yours. So nothing is too crazy for our podcast. If you think they're going to win 162 games, let us know. And let us know why. We want to hear those,
that's those wild the key right there.
Listener theory. Yeah, and why? Why would you think that a team could go perfect in a particular year? But yeah, and that'll be fun. So obviously we stream this live on Facebook. So for those of you listening on audio, we'll be doing this again next Monday afternoon. At least we should be, barring any changes. You can catch us on audio at any of your favorite audio podcast catchers. You can get both formats online at torturecast.com. Social media, you can like us on Facebook, follow us collectively at TortureCast on Twitter. You can also follow us individually at ChadK21 and at 2OutHits. That's with the number 2 for Eric. So as we kind of head into this last week, we have 10 days till opening day, but 7 days, a week till our season preview. You got anything you want to share, or any nuggets of wisdom there? Any golden night nuggets?
Yeah. Yeah. They went after they beat the Sharks twice last week. They went out and crammed the bet against the Kings. So that's
sorry, Bay Area fans. Yeah.
Not really though. Not really at all. I don't know. I like being the bad guy when it comes to that stuff. No, I mean, we've seen Buster. Buster's my only real concern right now.
Yeah.
I want to see if Buster's hip is healthy, and he needs to start hitting. There's only so much of this weak ground balls to the right side, weak pop-ups that we can take. We got to see if he's got something. But other than that, you know, the team looks pretty set, and I hope that we have a roster to pour over a week from today.
Yeah, for sure. This is going to be good. This is going to be interesting. The Giants are having a little bit more hope than they've had in a couple years past. Again, with the NL West, the way it's shaping up, none of us, and I mean me and Eric and I, are not expecting the Giants to compete for a playoff spot unless they expand the playoffs this year, which, by the way, they still haven't announced that officially, have they? Did I miss something? Yeah, and I know it happened right when the season was starting last year, or right before the season started. But last year was a weird season. It didn't start till, you know, the end of June or whenever it was. Now we have more of a traditional starting date, and they still haven't announced exactly how the playoffs are going to work. I think that's incredibly weird. Like, why hasn't that happened? What do you think the holdup is? I haven't heard anything other than they're just talking.
Yeah, I think that is the holdup. I don't think anything will change. I think it's going to be the regular 5 playoff teams. And the Giants are going to have to try to squeak their way in if they're going to want to get there this year.
No, for sure, because the NL West is especially with both the Dodgers and the Padres, the Giants are probably have zero hope of winning the West. As far as a wild card concern, again, it's just two wild cards out of the National League most likely, and the Padres or Dodgers most likely will be that first or second wild card. So it's going to be a really tough uphill battle for the Giants this year. But that said, it looks like things are going to be, you know, a lot better in 2022 and 2023, barring a strike. little CBA problems, yeah, knock on wood again. But this is going to be a fun year regardless. You know, sometimes these years, kind of after the 2017 year, so it's been a few years of this, I'd get so anxious and high anxiety about the Giants making the playoffs and being in the playoffs and getting, you know, my nails bitten down to their roots, just always worrying about how they're going to do in the playoffs. Now it's kind of more relaxed. It's like, well, you know, let's just shoot for 500 and see what happens.
Well, they haven't been 500 since 2016. So.
Exactly. So it's been a rough few years, several years. So yeah, no high hopes. But also, the benchmark isn't set too high. So
nope, not at all.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for episode 217 of the TortureCast. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We really do appreciate it. We have some really good numbers on Facebook and our downloads and everything like that. I think people are getting excited for the season as we approach closer to opening day. So for Eric, this is Chad signing off, and we'll see you next week for our season preview in episode 218. Until then, stay safe and take care. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.